Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I like knowing our listeners are out there gambling away their mortgage, pumping down heaters, looking for free water down gin and tonics. That's our guy. That's our guy.
Russ Dellinger.
It's been great, like I said, for their brand and the league in general. But for attendance, yeah, I can imagine it hurting. If I was a fan of one of those schools, I would be pretty upset about the weekday games. Those are hard to get to.
And SI's Pat Forte.
But yeah, Kiffin, you said he's nuanced. I think he's just all over the place. I mean, he's like, this is terrible. Well, I'm not complaining. This is fine.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And there was a little more. We're going to get to Big Ten. We're going to preview Big Ten Media Days. That's how exciting this is.
Previewing. We're going to talk about people who are going to talk to us in 2 days.
We're going to preview what they might say.
Yes. Preview the preview.
Get the season here, please. These people are like, I don't like week zero. I'd like week -5 at this point. Yeah. FCS should be playing now. I don't care how hot it is.
Hey, remember, we once championed Central Arkansas in a big way because they actually played football before everybody else.
They did. Central Arkansas, Abilene Christian. Yep, they were some of our favorite college teams. There's no COVID in Abilene, man. Too scared to hit West Texas. All right, so we will get to that. We got a few other things, but we did our schedule of taping made us miss Lane Kiffin at SEC Media Days, and his most interesting thing were he had many provocative comments. He declined, unfortunately, to rank the aggressiveness of the boosters at SEC schools. Would have been an all-timer. He wanted to, but he thought it would be more mature. He says he's more mature now. Commissioner Sankey has instructed him he doesn't have to answer every question and prove he's the smartest guy. So we didn't get that. That would have been the gem. But maybe next, step it up, Lane. Come on now. You can do it. He said this, and it goes into Ross is saying there's a meeting of NIL. What'd you call them, Ross? NIL?
It's a NIL stakeholders meeting.
Stakeholders. Yes, I like this. All right. We're going to get to what the hell is an NIL stakeholder in a moment, but because I'm still not sure. I love how these people say they own an industry. But that's like 2 years old. Kiffin on NIL said that with the transfer portal, which again is my issue, they could solve this. Free agency now exists. We've got six professional sports, except with no salary cap or luxury tax, said. And I'm not complaining about it because we take advantage, obviously, of free agency. He called it a pay-for-play system and said the current state of college football is a disaster. Now, it's a disaster that he's not complaining about. I suppose that's like contractors after a hurricane. Like, you know, well,
he's had success amid the disaster. That's right. It is. It's like my grandpa was a roofer, and every time a hurricane hit the Gulf Coast, right, he got all this business. So he didn't root for the hurricane, but let's just say three of his renovations to his home created a new wing of the home, and each one is named after a hurricane.
So maybe he did root for a hurricane.
I'm not saying that, Dan.
Yeah, I am. No deaths, right? But, yeah. I mean, yeah, if you got to bang nails, you need somewhere to bang the nails, and some roofs flying off, not bad. The insurance is paying for it. Anyway, this goes, I mean, I get what Lane is saying. He's actually fairly nuanced on this, and he says he takes advantage, but again, with the disaster stuff, because that was the headline. It was like on the ticker of ESPN, college football, a disaster. You know, I'm not sure the disaster isn't that we're finally finding out how much hazing was going on when these players had no rights and couldn't say a word and all of that. What was the disaster then? But they were getting money. Yeah. I hope Big Ten coaches don't spend their media day describing the sport that's making them all rich and we all love a disaster because some guys can fix your transfer portal. if you want. Anyway, thoughts on Lane's discussion and the latest whatever. Oh, we had a bipartisan bill come forward. All this. What's the latest in the last 5 days? I say nothing, but maybe there is something.
There's always something. Yeah, there's always something. Yeah,
we heard from Lane. I'm a stakeholder.
Yeah, so you know, there's going to be a lot of bills, new congressional bills, and there have been like coming out, and it's going to be that case for the next maybe one more week or so before Congress breaks for their annual summer, whatever recession or whatever they call it, and they basically break all of August, I think. And so before that happens, you end up seeing a lot of bills and stuff like that. So we had a couple kind of come out last week. One has folks maybe more optimistic than they've been in a while because it is a bipartisan bill. Cory Booker and Richard Blumenthal, staunch, you know, left-leaning Democrats who have been fairly critical of the NCAA, have partnered with a conservative Republican from Kansas and Jerry Moran, and they've created a bill that, for the most part, is pretty balanced and moderate, just about as balanced and moderate as I've seen of any bill. And there were some compromises made there. You know, I think the Republican side compromised on long-term medical care, and I think the Democrats compromised on revenue sharing and pulling that out of the bill. So that's one that has people talking for sure. You know, Ted Cruz came out with a bill, I guess not officially yet. Maybe that'll drop officially this week. It is more right-leaning, you might say, conservative, empowers the NCAA completely, gives the NCAA antitrust, deems athletes students and not employees. It pretty much does everything right college leaders would want. I am certain that Democrats will not sign on to that bill. And then eventually, probably this week, I'd assume, the Tuberville and Manchin bill will drop officially. We've seen I wrote last month a little bit about the early draft I'd gotten. It's kind of similar to Ted Cruz's bill. It's certainly a little bit on the right there, even though it is, quote, bipartisan, right, because Manchin being a Democrat, but he's not a Democrat like Richard Blumenthal and Cory Booker are Democrats. Different kind of Democrats, I think you could say. So that's what's going on there in Congress. You know, this week in Indianapolis, along with Big Ten Media Days, there will be a, quote, NIL stakeholders meeting. Basically, it's the NIL working group, which is getting back together and trying to maybe create a more permanent NIL policy instead of the temporary kind of guidelines that have been out there right now. And they're meeting in Indianapolis, and they've invited some athletes to join them. There might end up being eventually some collective folks joining them and other people in the NIL space. Maybe there's some agents or something that show up, and they're supposed to talk about the good, the bad, and what kind of legislation they can impose, if any.
I got a couple questions before I get to you, Pat. One, they should invite some people like me who tell them to all shut up. Okay. The busybodies at the stakeholder meeting. You declare yourself, okay, one group wants to do business with another group, and I'm going to jump in and be the stakeholder. Hold on, I'm the stakeholder. Okay, did you say you saw a draft of federal legislation? Are you writing laws, Ross? What is going on?
No, this is the Tuberville Mansion draft. Well, see what happens.
You saw a draft of federal. Is that legal? Or should we contact the FBI?
Yeah, it's legal.
What
it's
is
legal.
Going on?
So what?
They
what
send them to us all the time.
Yeah, that's the right. There's a lot. Now, yes. Well, yes. So it. Yeah, I mean, like last week when they're about ready to announce, oftentimes they do distribute them, but. The
but
Tuberville
that's
Mansion
like, oh,
draft.
That, I thought you were like getting a word, like, can you send us notes? Are you getting that? Send back notes?
Well, the Tuberville Mansion draft I got was from late April, and it was like a working draft. They didn't send it to media. I got it because they sent it to college administrators, and they sent it to me.
I think the pod should be writing laws. That's what I want to see happen.
No, we should not be writing laws.
Yes.
That doesn't sound
better
good.
Than these guys. This law's stupid. It's got zero chance. Beat it. Pat, your thoughts.
Yeah.
Well, I want to get back to Kiffin because it is a shame when he doesn't coincide with pod taping schedules and we can talk about all the crazy things that come out of his mouth. But yeah, Kiffin, you said he's nuanced. I think he's just all over the place. I mean, he's like, this is terrible. Well, I'm not complaining. This is fine. But here's the thing, you know, Kiffin. We have professional sports. We have free agency. People can just get up and go hither and thither. What did Lane Kiffin do after a year at Tennessee?
Went pro.
Did he get up and go? Did he go take a better offer? Go take a job he'd rather have at USC? Went from Tennessee to USC. Got fired at USC. Bounced back at Florida Atlantic. Couldn't wait to get out of Florida Atlantic. I think he did 2 or maybe 3 years there, but he was itching to go the last, you know, after one. He was trying to go. Was he trying to get out of Ole Miss last year? Well, there's a lot of talk between him and Auburn, that's for sure. So Lane Kiffin's free agency is one thing. Player free agency apparently is another, which is the problem we have with this whole thing. Free agency and or compensation for me if you're a coach or an administrator, not for thee if you're a player. I think everybody's come around to the fact that it's okay to have NIL, but there's still so much hand-wringing and complaining about this. To Dan's consistent point, what sport sits around and just bemoans it's like, oh, this is terrible, we're awful, this is just a disaster? Why, you know, there is so much complaining that goes along with a sport that is rather robustly healthy. It's interesting.
I mean, think about Lane Kiffin's career and all of the things that entailed. And I don't think he thinks through it. I think he just says stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah. And this guy continually gets employed for more and more and more money. I mean, and I'm a huge fan of his career. In my top 10 greatest NFL moments is the time he was so mad at Al Davis in Oakland. And Al Davis is so mad at him, he sent Sebastian Janikowski out to try like an 85-yard field goal. Yeah. Okay, so I love all of it. I love all of it. This is nothing against you, Lane, but the fact that you can be pull an absolute disrespectful, I say this in the best line, punk move to like a senior football person and then immediately be hired at another job, right? All the things. Yeah, it's not a disaster. Stop calling it a disaster, okay? It's all right. You got to change how your roster management. They talk, so the job's hard, there's more time and all that. Yes, the salaries get bigger and all that. Anyway, I don't know what the stakeholders are. It seems like the same people as the last group. It's just they changed, like put on a new mask, like Scooby-Doo, take the mask off. Hey!
Well,
right? It was like and I say this with all due respect because he's going to retire, like when Bill Hancock went from, we can't have a playoff to being the guy running the playoff. Like, okay, you know, okay, whatever. Like, good for Bill. Make your living. Great guy. But wait, weren't you the guy?
Yeah, who kept telling us why a playoff was bad?
I remember you from last week.
It's like he put on a different mask.
No one noticed that Clark Kent and Superman look a lot alike. Did no one ever notice? I don't know. Anyway, not, but these are the headlines that, oh my God, it's a disaster.
Well, I will say, talking about the same people, you know, putting on different masks. So the NIL working group, for the most part, is the same people who, you know, that formed the working group, same administrators that formed the working group in 2019 to come up with a permanent NIL policy. And then, of course, they did come up with a permanent NIL policy that was supposed to be voted on in January 2021 at the NCAA convention. But the Department of Justice sent a letter scaring NCAA leaders, and they, as we all remember, they didn't vote and they didn't implement a permanent NIL policy, and we got a kind of a vague interim policy instead. And so now they're trying to go back and maybe implement some of the concepts that were in the permanent NIL policy. But it is a lot of the same people. There's a few new people on the working group, and there'll be a few people, I think, like Jack Swarbrick at Notre Dame. I don't think he's on the NIL working group, but he's going to be, I believe, in ND for the stakeholders meeting. And You have Gene Smith, who's on the working group, and Rick George there, AD at Colorado in the working group, will be there. So a lot of big Power Five players and athletes, and like I said, maybe some folks in the NIL space for a robust discussion.
Go around in circles. Get out. Go to your lake house. Don't be a part of one of these. You're not going to win. It's over. Capitalism's going to win on this one. All right. Big Ten Media Days coming up to me. You can come up with yours, but let's start with this. Most interesting guy at Big Ten Media Days, Ryan Day, Ohio State head coach. One field goal from probably winning the national championship, the doomed midnight, the midnight kick that was awry. He's 45-6 at Ohio State playoffs. Multiple years, recruiting, absolutely rolling. He's 31-2 in the Big Ten. Those two are stand out like blinking red letters. Michigan's the trendy pick, not just trendy. Michigan's the overwhelming pick, I would expect, to win the Big Ten. Penn State is the trendy. Have we just forgotten about Ohio State? How much pressure is on Ryan Day this year, and how tired is he going to get of sitting there going, I'm 31-2 in this league and 45-6 overall, and I'm getting asked about how I'm doing at my job. Pat?
Yeah, it's a great point that he's doing really well at his job. It's just that when the losses have happened here lately, they've been bad. Now, yes, the field goal that was kicked in 2022 and landed in 2023, landed far wide of the uprights against Georgia. If that goes through, or if any like number of like eight other plays didn't go just barely Georgia's way in the last quarter and a half of that game, Ohio State is playing for and probably winning the national championship and has scored one of the best victories in its recent history. So that is how fickle the sport is. That's the dividing line between you're our hero and what have you done for me lately? It's incredible, but that's kind of the world that Ryan Day has signed up for and is getting $9 or $10 million a year to live in. There's no doubt that he has a Michigan problem now. Is it a surmountable problem? Well, it could be. I mean, they might be good enough. They showed me a level of toughness and moxie against Georgia that if they can carry that over, shows that that program's not as soft as maybe I thought they were when I was watching Michigan punk them in Ohio Stadium. But Penn State, as you mentioned, also should be really good on paper if they get Drew Aller, the quarterback, to step up and be big time as a first-year starter. Look out for them. So Big Ten East, this is as interesting as it's ever been, and it's usually very interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. Brian Day obviously is going to get much of the attention at Big Ten day one of Big Ten Media Day and Wednesday, and day two is in Michigan. I believe day one, like Pat mentioned, is also Penn State, so they'll get a lot of the attention. But I think also day one is Northwestern.
Yeah,
and
a lot.
Certainly. There's some things to write about there. Interim coach David Braun will be there. And I believe today, and probably already happened by the time the pod dropped, there's supposed to be more details of the latest lawsuit from Northwestern players against the university that in this, Adam Rittenberg tweeted this morning from ESPN. There's supposed to be maybe some more troubling allegations and incidents. So to me, while certainly the spotlight will be probably on the Michigans and the Ohio States and stuff, it'll be interesting to see what David Braun and the Northwestern players say, because certainly there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, the only thing we know about David Braun is that he does not have a master's degree from Winona State.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's the sum total of our knowledge there. That what he had that? A resume that that he had gotten a master's from Winona State, and then, oops, that turned out to not be the case.
Winona State?
Yeah, Minnesota.
Yeah. Kind of weird place to lie. I mean, if I'm going to lie about getting a master's, like, put me down for Yale.
Well, he did actually go to school at Winona State, so there's belief he was enrolled. And this is how well Northwest things are going for Northwestern. I mean, first this all, you know, everything is blown up, and then they saw this guy for the interim, and then there's this resume controversy. And Northwestern says in a statement he did not falsify his credentials. This he did not misrepresent. Blah 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 blah. But then it turns out this Winona State degree had been on his resume at like three stops previously. So explain to us, Northwestern.
I mean, it's a weird thing to lie about. It's like being at a bar and talking to a girl and being like, hey, man, I drive a 2011 Chevy Malibu. Someone going, you do not. All right. I was just trying to impress you. What in the world?
We're going to hear from the Winona State grads now.
Sorry, Winona. You wouldn't have let me in either. So don't talk to me. Oh, no. I couldn't have taken their academic rigor. I'm hosting a college football podcast. All right. All right. Other. Obviously, we're going to get a lot of Michigan. We have not heard from Michigan and Jim Harbaugh since the affair last winter where he was in the NCAA crosshairs. Does anyone bring that up, or is that everyone forgotten about that one or not? Obviously, ton of pressure on Penn State. Is this the year? Maybe what are the chances of these two? Like, do you feel solid of these two surpassing Ohio State this year? I just feel like Ohio State's getting like kicked off to the curb. Oh, well, like this flavor of the month stuff. I'm not saying Michigan's didn't earn this, but they got everyone back. They're very loaded. Not everybody, but they got a lot of guys back. But it's like we've just everyone's kind of moved on and gone to these two guys. I still think Michigan's always going to have something to prove against Ohio State, and Penn State hasn't been able to beat Ohio State. So like, what for James Franklin? Does he get any questions on this? Pat?
James Franklin is 4-14 against Michigan and Ohio State.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of coaches are 4-14 or worse against those two, but it's Penn State. That's the place where you're supposed to be on par with them, and they haven't been. So, yeah, for Franklin, this, I think, is a huge prove-it year. You've got maybe your best team, but you got these two roadblocks, and especially Ohio State, they haven't been able to get by. I think they've lost six in a row to Ohio State. So there's a lot, I think, riding on this season for James Franklin as well. You know, I wouldn't say he's beloved by Penn State fans. He's had a good run. He's had some good records. He's had a couple of very good teams, but he hasn't been able to have the breakthrough team that makes a playoff, competes for a national championship. So between that, yes, the Harbaugh thing, all right, he's basically said this is the best version of Michigan I've seen, which is a lot about this team. He said that in the spring. And then, yes, he has the NCAA situation, and then he also spoke to his love of mowing the lawn. So with Harbaugh, as usual, there's plenty of storylines.
I know what I'm most interested in.
We do. Yes. His zero-turn mower.
Yeah. I haven't got the invite out to ride that thing. Anytime here, Coach Jim.
Yeah, he hasn't kind of squashed expectations like you see coaches normally do, Jim Harbaugh. We saw him back in the spring tout how good the team is, and or how good he thinks the team is and how talented it is. And so I'm sure they'll take most of the headlines of day two on Thursday at Big Ten Media Day.
Big Ten has got a ton going on. How about two new coaches? Maybe there's more. I don't know. They got a lot of teams in this league. I can't keep track. They merely add Matt Rhule to Nebraska and Luke Fickell to Wisconsin. I mean, these are monster additions, as head coaches. And they're about to get Chip Kelly and Lincoln Riley. But we'll wait on a year on that because we'll get to the Pac-12 that Ross went out to. I don't know. Expectations for each of those guys coming in. I think a bigger rebuild right now for Matt Rhule out in Lincoln.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm super excited to see what both those guys have in store there. I mean, I think Matt Rhule gives Nebraska just a soundness, a credibility boost. You know, he's good. He's a guy that you figure knows absolutely how to run a program, build a program, coach a game, develop players. Things that became suspect about Scott Frost, you know, Frost caught lightning in a bottle to a degree at Central Florida. And again, I still think in history, Mackenzie Milton built Central Florida as much as anybody else did, the quarterback there. But I just think Matt Rhule's a really good hire for Nebraska and will do well in a place where you don't have to gimmick it up and just try to be good in six games. Take 2 years, whatever the case may be, 3 years, build your roster. And I know that's more difficult now, or maybe it's easier than it used to be. But he's a long haul kind of, I think, program builder. So I'd like Matt Rhule's chances there. And Luke Fickell, I just think is fantastic. I think that was the best hire in the offseason in college football to get him at Wisconsin, because he's a fantastic coach. Obviously you get Cincinnati to the college football playoff. Really? That's a landmark achievement, and him going to Wisconsin, I give him a chance to do very well there. We'll see how fast, but I think that's a great hire. Ryan Walters also is the other new coach going to Purdue, from Illinois, was defensive coordinator there. We'll see how that goes, but he's a very promising young coach.
This is this is Matt Rhule's week, right? He's just about as affable and kind of outgoing and talkative in front of a camera, in spotlight, as any coach, and he's really good at it. I mean, when you hear him talk and when you see him in front of the camera, you know why he has had success motivating a team in the past and recruiting. So this is kind of his week. I think he'll excel at Big Ten Media Day, and I'm sure he's excited about it. But I agree. I think those are like one and two as far as the best hires of the offseason, right? We're gonna see them both this week. Luke Fickell at Wisconsin and Matt Rhule at Nebraska.
Yeah, huge gets. And I think both will, like the way Zach Arnett at Mississippi State just seemed very prepared to like seize what spotlight he could at last week at SEC Media Day. And some of the coaches do, or they do it in different ways too. Sam Pittman, right? He gets up there, just tells jokes because he knows that's what's
Ham's beer. You get.
Yeah, let's. Oh yeah, we need to talk about some Ham's beer. We're getting Ham's. All right,
yeah, people are into the Ham's beer.
The listenership went crazy at Ham beer supply. Commercials. Yeah. Commercials, everything. All right, we're gonna talk Ham's
people
beer.
People were appalled at Ross for his lack of Ham's knowledge.
Yeah, because it is from Minnesota, yes. And it's a little like, you know. So I just think these guys will be very like Matt Rhule's. I guaranteed, like, set out a little like point by point messaging that he wants out. He's coming in prepared for media day. Guys think this is just nothing. They take this stuff seriously. And Fickell, yeah, it's going to be big for both of those. One more Big Ten coach to get to before we get to the, what was it? The land of clear sky blue.
Sky blue waters.
Sky blue waters.
Sky blue waters.
Right. Sky blue waters. Mel Tucker, Michigan State. I think he will be a deal there. First year, he goes 5-7 at Colorado, gets hired after the late retirement, like the February retirement of Mark D'Antonio, and 2-5 in the COVID year, whatever. Then bang, 11-2, nets this contract that everybody talks about, including me. I guess I'm bringing it up. Nets the $95 million contract. And then proceeds to go 5-7 and didn't look too good last year. Low expectations for Michigan State this season. I thought one of the more telling ones was they moved their season finale with Penn State at home to Ford Field, which was they were willing to do because I think they knew there's a chance there weren't going to be a whole lot of Spartan fans there on Thanksgiving weekend. How many, you know, if they're not having a great season and the weather stinks, they sometimes struggle for attendance at that game and they didn't want to deal with that. So they literally were moving to move a game. I thought that was a kind of a institutional tell that maybe, I mean, if you think you're having a big game, you're not giving up your home field against Penn State if you think it's going to matter for a lot. So they did that anyway. Mel Tucker? How, or is there too many storylines he can kind of slip in under the radar? Or is it, are people going to ask him some stuff?
Pat? Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, from that standpoint, he's like fifth, sixth, seventh on the storyline list. So that might be to his advantage, because I don't think they have a lot of good things to talk about. You know, they were a huge disappointment last year, 5-7 and some bad losses. They got routed by Washington. They were routed by Minnesota, lost by 2 touchdowns to Maryland, not close against Ohio State, not close against Michigan, lost to Indiana. There just wasn't much going on. And then it got worse in the spring when Peyton Thorne, their like 3-year starting quarterback, transferred, and their top receiver, blanking on the name for a sec, Keon Coleman, he transferred. And so it's like, what exactly is going on there? And Mel's done well in the portal as far as people coming in, and maybe he's got some, but they've got a major quarterback issue to solve. They've got to get better defensively. This was a team that, you know, Mel's a defensive guy, and last year defensively they were mediocre at best. So he's got some work to do to turn this thing back around to be the guy who was 11-2 and one of the toasts of the sport in 2021.
Yeah, I was trying to go back to see, you know, he got that 10-year, $95 million contract, I think late in 2021. So I was trying to figure out what his record was since the contract was kind of like leaked, since the first reports of the contract. And I think it's something like 7-8, maybe. Yeah, it's like his total record is 7-8. Didn't they come out and they got just routed by Ohio State? Yeah.
And then they lost to Penn State. Yeah, it's not, yeah, it hasn't been great.
Yeah. They
beat Penn State.
They beat Penn State. Then they lost the bowl.
Well, no, they actually won the bowl.
They won the bowl.
They lost to Ohio State. They beat Penn State and they beat Pitt in the bowl. And then they went 5-7, you know, so I think it was like 7-8 was his record after the contract. So, yeah, I mean, this feels like a pretty big year for him. When you're paying a coach $95 million, you want more than 5-7. Like Pat said, there's so many, I guess, more attractive storylines, I think, in the conference that I'm sure he's probably happy about that.
They did land a in-state really good receiver, Nick Marsh, recently. So, you know, it's like the potential's still there for Mel Tucker. It just, that was a bad season. So we'll see if he can. It's not easy to turn that thing around. All right, who's asking PJ Fleck about Ham's beer? That's what we really want to know. one of the joys of this podcast is something like Sam Pittman, the Arkansas coach, gets asked whether he likes drinking Ham's beer out of nowhere. For total non, I don't know why the question was asked, still don't. He says he did like Ham's beer. He does like it, but it makes him burp too much. Then he kind of says that the reporter who is talking about Ham's beer probably has got a decent job enough that he can afford better than Ham's beer. And then we discuss it, and then we are inundated all weekend on social media with old Ham's beer TV commercials, the Ham's bear was playing baseball in one of them. Did you see this? Yeah. You see that one? He was the hand, and they threw the ball at the Ham's bear, who's the mascot for the Ham's beer, and it got in his mouth, and then he kind of burped the ball, and it went for a home run. So there was something. Commercials in the 70s, like straight up, did this run on Saturday mornings when kids were? So they got us. This is how they got us. The land of sky blue waters. Its current motto is also the beer, refreshing.
Well, again, when you're on the cheaper side of things, probably just best to keep it simple and not brag too much about what you don't have.
Ross had never heard of Ham's beer. I definitely had drank some Ham's through the years. It's this great name, the sky blue waters. So anyway, Ham's, if you're looking, you know, like we need a beer sponsor. And I can assure you, no one else is talking about you.
That's right. Come on.
Nobody else. Talk to us.
Come on, Dan. You know, there's like a Minnesota radio station up there that's like
outside of Duluth.
Yeah.
Other than other than the Duluth Curling Club podcast.
I would say from age 25 younger, Hams is certainly probably in the top 10, maybe top five beers I ingested the most of. I'm glad there's no official tally on that, but.
Theodore Ham came from Germany and did this thing up. So I don't know.
Theodore Ham's our guy. He is our
Theodore Ham arrived in 1856.
Okay.
And with a clear, simple dream to create a quality American brew to be enjoyed by all. It would blow his mind that 100 and whatever this is, almost 70 years later, on some technology that did not exist. We're discussing this.
Yeah, we're discussing him and his sky blue water beer. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Way to go, Teddy there. Yeah. Anyway. So I don't know. That's what we got. All right. Pac-12 Media Day. Ross, you went and you played blackjack with a pod listener. Is that true?
Well, I was, after Pac-12 Media Day, sat down at, it was, of course, at a casino, Pac-12 Media Day. Oh, yeah, it was in Vegas. And so, of course, it was at a resort that, undoubtedly, just like everything in Vegas, has a casino in it. And so, yeah, after Media Day, sat down for about 30 minutes, played some blackjack. And I was talking, a friend of mine sat down with me, another writer, and we were talking back and forth as we were playing. There was a guy at the kind of the end of the table who at one point said, your voice sounds familiar. Oh, wait, you're on the pod. So, yeah, that was that was pretty funny.
I like knowing our listeners are out there gambling away their mortgage, pumping down heaters, looking for free water down gin and tonics. That's right. That's our guy. That's our guy.
That's right. That's right.
That's why Hams should be sponsoring us.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, that was definitely that was the highlight of Pac-12 Media Day right there. Nothing else. There's nothing else to talk about.
They have an unbelievable season, and it's like they have this is one of the most exciting Pac-12 seasons.
Oh yeah,
going like the they got like five really good teams. They got the returning Heisman, all this stuff, and everyone's talking about TV contract and all this stuff. They get Coach Prime. Apparently the surgery went well. He's feeling well, so that's good. We need Coach Prime on the sideline. This is big season at Pac-12, and no one's talking about it, including us, because we just follow the sheep.
Well, I think that they were trying to, they had attempted to make the focus football as best as they could. But it obviously was tough, right? The focus for a second straight year really kind of you just felt it lingering over everything was the future of the conference and the instability in the TV deal. I would think the highlight for me was around midday about halfway through. Rick George, the Colorado athletic director, and obviously there's been a lot of things swirling about Colorado potentially leaving the school or leaving the conference and going to maybe the Big 12. That's in discussions with, I think, Colorado officials. And Colorado officials like Rick George, the AD, and the chancellor of the school have kind of left the door open to that possibility. So naturally, at Media Day, us media wanted to chat with Rick George. Most of the athletic directors of the Pac-12 were there, if not all of them. And so Rick was there, and we, about five media members kind of approached Rick as he got off the stage, of Pac-12 Media Day. And he said that he had a flight and he kept on moving and dipped into a dark hallway. We followed and he grabbed his stuff and boom, he was out of the building. Like Elvis into the summer heat of Las Vegas.
He's ducking you.
So that was interesting and just provided kind of a, and he did have a flight, and I get it. We've all been late to flights, and he was allegedly late, to his flight. But it was just this whole scene was a. Just kind of fascinating scene of, and just kind of was a window into the kind of the state of the league where the focus unfortunately, Wright wasn't on these great quarterbacks and these great offenses that we're supposed to see this year that should be on the field, but instead is on the future of the conference in a member that is maybe interested in another suitor. Hmm. So
interesting. I mean, it is called. I understand nobody cares about the plight of the media and like availability for interviews. Totally get it. But it is called Media Day. It's like in Caddyshack when it was Caddy Day. The caddies get to play. Like they get to go in the pool. Like it's like Urban Meyer did that once. I was like, he's like, I remember seeing this guy try to get him on a radio show. Coach Meyer is not a fit. He was out of Florida then. He's got to get back to campus. Like it's called Media Day. Let the poor guy get his interview. That was the whole day. It's middle of July. So anytime they're ducking on Media Day, I don't know. It's interesting. That tells me more than anything he could have not said in a empty statement.
Yeah. Couple things there. First of all, if Rick George is going to do that, if you're going to go to Media Day and then rush out when you know people want to talk to you, why you're there to begin with, just don't even go, you know. But secondly, that does call to mind, Dan, what you said, a great line from the great Jerry Tipton, who covered Kentucky basketball for like 7 decades, not quite that much, but a long ass time, and took no guff from any of the coaches. This was a few years ago. John Calipari was like on Kentucky Media Day, was either trying to shoot down a question or tell people something they shouldn't ask about or whatever. And Tipton said, "This is Media Day, not Coaches Day. We'll decide what we want to ask."
Get one day.
Yeah. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. Good don't job, ask. Jerry. Don't ask about our point guard rotation. Yeah. We're gonna. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but no, to the point. This is the Pac-12 being the Pac-12, and it's just the number of self-inflicted wounds, and maybe this was a bit unavoidable, you know, just this kind of collision of unreconciled media rights business with bringing everybody together to talk about the football season. But if you don't have that reconciled, you can't really just say, well, no, don't ask us about that. Talk about this. And it is too bad because, I mean, these are the quarterbacks in the league this year. Caleb Williams, reigning Heisman Trophy winner, probably the first pick in the NFL draft. Bo Nix had a phenomenal season last year. Michael Penix, ridiculous season at Washington. Cameron Rising at Utah. He's coming off the knee injury in the Rose Bowl, but he's been great there. Jaden DeLora at Arizona. Cameron Ward at Washington State. Shedeur Sanders coming in at Colorado. Deion Sunn and DJ Uiagalelei coming in at Oregon State. I mean, it's going to be fascinating. I think it's going to be really, really good, and I hope we can actually enjoy watching Pac-12 football as opposed to watching the league devour itself.
Yeah, I think you're right on that.
To his credit, Commissioner George Kolivkov, in his address, opening address at Pac-12 Media Day, knowing what was going to be asked, just kind of out and said it, right, that, okay, ask me all your non-football questions. And we did. We did. Yep. And he answered most of them. Some of them maybe not so clearly, but he did address most of them and gave us a little bit of a window into the Pac-12 deal. Sure seems like it's very, very close to being done. If in George's mind, maybe he's the only one who knows, maybe it is done, but not announced or not shared with anybody. So I guess it can't be done until it's shared and voted on by the board. So I would think in the next few days, maybe a couple weeks, that might happen. Of course, we've been hearing a couple weeks now for 8 months. He did answer questions about it. And took a lot of questions about it, certainly. And he continues to be confident and optimistic. And most of the athletic directors were there. And, you know, they seem to be pretty confident about a deal. And as George said, and many of them said, the longer they wait, the options, the better their options are getting. Now, many outside the conference don't quite understand that, right? They have doubts or questions about that statement, but they're certainly singing it within the league.
The Mac had their media day. Maction.
Yes. Yes.
Toledo's really good. That's your, you know, that's your sleeper New Year's Day six. Mm. We'll see. Could cause some headaches. I don't think it'd be interesting a year from now. Sorry, Toledo. But to have this level of a team, now you're like, hey, this is a possible playoff team. This is why expanded playoffs gonna be really cool. Not, hey, you might get in the New Year's sticks, but you're like, hey, Toledo, not bad. And they could be your sixth conference team in, and you know, what do you know, right? And that would certainly generate a great deal of excitement in Toledo and improve the sport all over just to have that chance. The New Year's Six thing, which was kind of that was the carrot, never really panned out, although I think Tulane had an awful lot of fun last year making it. But a kind of interesting thing Tony Paul of the Detroit News had. So we have Maction. Most people consume the Mac through the November Tuesday, Wednesday games, which are basically gambling degenerate catnip. Catnip. But, and they make good money, like the league, I think each school makes over $1 million from TV money, which is all, it means a great deal to these athletic departments and all of that. And it's good exposure and we all kind of watch and it's pretty fun, but it's not great for fans. A weeknight games. It's hard to get fans there. It's the weather is often terrible. I mean, we always joke. It's like the stadiums are empty except for like three guys standing over a trash barrel that's burning to keep warm. I'm like, Tuesday night, 9 p.m. game in DeKalb. They're like the fans, there's like 40 fans there. It's just like not good, right? So one of the controversies in the MAC has been that, like, so there are some rivalries in the MAC. There are some proud football programs. Yeah. And so Akron-Kent, right? That's like a real rivalry. Bowling Green-Toledo is a big rivalry. They have that great trophy they play for, which is just basically the Interstate 75 sign.
Yeah,
they made a trophy. Right. I think they should have just stolen the sign from the side of the road and handed it back and forth. And just
gigantic, unwieldy. Yeah.
Let the Ohio Department of Transportation
come. Pick up and
drive
it back and forth between the schools.
Yeah. Yeah, just give the actual sign that's like half, like it's in Perrysburg or something between them. And we stole the sign. We handed it back. Hey, you know, ODOT, deal with it, man. Like, sorry, we stole your sign. Okay. And then maybe, you know, whatever the fine is, somebody pay it out of your $1 million from ESPN. But, Western Michigan Central. So these are the games that like these schools build up for every year. And this would be the game that if it was on a Saturday afternoon, particularly earlier in the year, you might get a really nice crowd for. Like that's like make that your game. And instead, a lot of them have been moved to, you know, a Tuesday night on November 18th or something, and attendance has suffered. So particularly Western and Central have been trying to kind of, can we figure out a way to get the weekend game going back? And apparently there is a deal now with ESPN. We'll see if it comes through for some of these games to go back to Saturdays and maybe even earlier in the year so that they can have that great, like a football weekend where you fill your stadium, you almost fill your stadium, get your alums back. So you're just not getting on a Wednesday night or a Tuesday night. And I think it's a good idea because I don't think television ratings really, I don't think people are tuning in because it's like, hey man, big Central Western game tonight. It's just like somebody's giving seven to somebody else. And that's like, that's all.
It didn't matter the game, right? There's a game, right? It doesn't matter.
There's a game. I have no game to watch, so I'm watching this game. I don't know. Thoughts on this?
Ross, go ahead if you got any.
No, I think, I completely understand. It's one thing, it's something I don't really think about a lot, but it's like, oh, yeah, you know, having a Tuesday game or a Wednesday game would certainly impact attendance. You know, we all love it and love to watch it midweek, and in the Max brand, Maction, you know, has become certainly improved and become what it is today, partly because of these midweek games. They were kind of the first to launch into it. And now we see, you know, some of the big boy, like, you know, the Big 12 talking about playing like on Friday nights. And obviously we see Thursday night games. And the MAC was kind of the first to go all in for these weekday games. And it's been great, like I said, for their brand and the league in general. But for attendance, yeah, I can imagine it hurting. If I was a fan of one of those schools, I would be pretty upset about weekday games. Those are hard to get to.
Yeah, it's a conundrum, right? You know, it's like it is kind of their calling card to a degree. They've leaned into it. They've had fun with the Maction thing. It's really like I just kind of enjoy the spirit of the league and the way like their commissioner John Steinbrecher wore a Phantom of the Opera mask to media days. You know, they don't take themselves too seriously, but at the same time, yeah, are you serving your actual the fans you actually have, or are you serving the random Tuesday, Wednesday night crowd that is just literally turning on the TV looking for football? So that's kind of the conflict they have there. Ultimately, I think you have to take care of the people who give money to the schools, who buy the tickets, who show up for the games. And so going back to more Saturday games probably would be a wise investment. But that's, you know, that is November football for a lot of people. When it comes to the MAC and you think of the MAC, as Dan said, the guys out of around the trash can in DeKalb or Oxford, Ohio, or Muncie, watching their team. But you know, it's a little bit of a tough situation. What's the best way to market your league there?
Yeah, and I think like if you get that football weekend, it's also like it's like student life, right? Or I'm not quite sure how to put it. The student experience. Mm-hmm. All these schools are trying to attract students, and so they can say, "Hey, look, come to Bowling Green." Now we don't have the football that Ohio State or Michigan State or something like that has, but we have a fun weekend too, and we have football, and we have that one big weekend where it's a big party and the tailgates everywhere and all of that, and so it's like you're serving your students, the community. I mean, you think about the money, even 20, 25,000 people coming into some of these towns. I mean, MAC towns are not sure. Big cities can matter and all of that. So I kind of like it. And I don't even mind. It's interesting because it's always been like you got to play your arch rival on the last game of the year. That's the tradition. But I don't know. Like if you just move it to a better weekend, I think one of the things about the MAC is it's very aware, self-aware.
Yes, it is. And exactly. That's what the point I guess I was trying to make.
Yeah. There's no heirs. Nobody left. Nobody leaves.
Right. No.
They occasionally try to add a team or two, but then they like UMass was in it for a little while, but then they're gone. Get out of here. Like they're like either join or don't. And there's no like we get a little extra. Everyone's just there. It is what it is. It's a bunch of good schools. Everyone's doing their thing. It's good football sometimes. And we are who we are. So try to maximize it. I like that. I'd prefer. I don't think it matters who is playing in those games.
Right.
I don't think. I think the TV rating, if it's Central versus Western Michigan on a Tuesday night, or it's Central versus Eastern Michigan on a Tuesday night, is so. I'm sure there's a couple people that are like, well, I got to watch the big Central Western game. But those are very small number of people. The average guy's just watching football because so. I would hope ESPN would, because I think it'd just be good for the overall sport. So
yeah, no, I'm with you.
Go Max. All right, Ross had a dip, so he's not in on this story, which is really the most important story of the week. We have an outlaw otter, Pat. An outlaw otter. Mm-hmm. The otter is like, what is an otter? It's like a it's like a beaver, like a sea lion beaver cross, right? What is an otter?
It's kind of a
I don't know much about otters. Yeah,
like it's not a seal and it's not a sea lion and it's not a beaver, but it's
something, you know, like that. They swim around. Yeah, a lot of swimming.
They do swim around.
Okay, well, yes. There's an outlaw otter. An otter. I'm gonna say this all. I feel like I'm saying the word wrong too. Everyone's gonna yell at me. You say otter weird. I do. I'm sure. How many
times
in your life? How many times in your life have you said the word otter? Other like like, it's just not a word you say often. An otter in California is on the run. The run from local and federal authorities wanted for aggressively confronting locals and stealing surfboards at a popular beach. An otter is ripping off the surfers, but its outlaw status has turned the slippery sea otter into an international icon with growing support to leave her in the wild. This is from NPR. Of course, they had to go that way. 5-year-old female otter, known officially as Otter 841. Well, they got to get a better name.
Can't we come up with a better name? Right, exactly.
Outlaw is really the name, right?
Yeah, it should be.
It's been named a public safety risk by state and federal wildlife officials because of her, quote, unusually aggressive behavior along the Santa Cruz coast. As a result, wildlife officials in the Monterey Bay Aquarium staff, there's a lot of people involved in this, are attempting to capture and rehome the otter in an aquarium or a zoo. But support for a live and let live approach is growing with each unsuccessful attempt. There is an Instagram account called Keep 841 Free and a photo of an activist dressed as an otter holding a surfboard. There's another letter to the editor in the Santa Cruz Sentinel. There, I guess they're covering this thing big. So there's 50,000 signatures to keep the otter free. She's the hero Santa Cruz deserves, but not the one it needs. Is what this is on. Apparently, let's see. Where's this? Where's the crimes? It stole some surfboards.
Yep. Which, think about that. This is what kind of, all right, so I looked it up.
I'm sure you're on the side otter. Of the otter. I think you're on the side of the otter. Yeah.
Of course I'm on the side of the otter. You know, you go surf in the otter's backyard, you take your chances. Don't go saying, oh, we got to take your land from you, your water from you, poor otter, 841. I'm absolutely on her side. But anyway, average female otter, 3.3 to 4.6 feet. How does an otter steal a surfboard? Surfboards are like 8 feet long. What kind of this is a stud otter, I would say here. This thing can move some product if it can grab or somehow, you know, drag a surfboard out in the sea and take it. I'm impressed.
There's a picture of it.
Yeah.
She's on the surfboard. I thought she chewed through the surfboard and took like pieces of it. There's a picture of her, right?
She's surfing?
At Native Santa Cruz on Instagram has a picture of the otter on top of this blue surfboard. An aggressive sea otter in California is harassing locals by riding boards she stole from the surfers in the lineup.
Look at that. Yeah.
So she rides up to where they all are waiting for the point break.
Oh, it's tremendous video.
There's videos.
Look, just takes the board from the surfer. It's like, get out of here, dude.
So the otter comes. This is like a daring thief. She just runs up. She swims up. And obviously the surfer's like, oh, crap. I don't want to fight an otter. Yeah. The surfer bails from the surfboard. And the otter just
tries to flip the board to get her off. No, that ain't working.
Oh, this is smash and grab. Yeah, this is just punching someone on the subway and taking their purse. Like, it's it.
You know who Otter 841 is?
Who?
Cluck Norris.
Cluck, it is. This is Cluck Norris. Look, there's another. Yeah. Look at this. Do you see the one where the woman's, like, trying to, like, hide from the other side of the surfboard?
No.
This otter is a badass.
Yeah.
I'm on otter's side. There's a number of them. The surfers are scared, and I get it. Yeah. But this is the otter's home.
Yes.
Surf for like an hour or two, and you get back in your car and you go home. And if the otter walked into your house or was trying to swim around in your tub, you're in the right. You go to their home.
See? You take your chances. That's it. Come
toughen up, Santa Cruz.
I will say, Santa Cruz, lovely area. Great little surfing community there. It's very nice. My daughter done some surfing there, but I asked her. She said, oh, I'm totally on the side of the outlaw. Remain at large, Otter. Take charge of that bay.
Fight the power, man. Yeah. No injuries. It just,
no.
Just takes your surfboard. Deal with it. Go find somewhere else to surf. This is my house. Go get them. I mean, these surfers have had their way with the otters for like 100 years.
Yeah.
So ever since they started surfing. Yeah.
Yeah. This is like, you know, this is the part two of some movie series. Now it's our turn. Back for revenge. Here come the otters. This is by Santa Cruz, by the way. Also, pod topic once where we, the Taco Bell that served alcohol.
Yeah.
It's in this area too. So.
Wait, that's in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, we talked about it on the pod.
Yeah. They serve them now, alcohol a lot of places now.
Yeah.
It seemed like a bad idea, but apparently not that. Not well, look what happened. The otter.
Otters get drunk and feisty.
I'm on the side of the otter. Free.
100%.
Otter 841. If you want to watch some funny videos of these pissed off surfers in Santa Cruz.
Being bullied by a sea creature.
My guess is I do not know how much a surf. I'm going to look up surfboard. How much does it cost to buy a surfboard? I'm thinking it's not cheap.
No, a new one's probably a few hundred dollars.
Well, they range, obviously, $113 to $799. Well, that's a retro. Yeah, $125. I don't know. What's he do? What's she doing with him? Maybe she's selling this one. She's taking them on eBay.
Reselling. Yeah.
I don't know. All right. Go Otter. You got it. All right. We're going to update the Outlaw Otter as the week goes on. We'll have more later this week. This
is an ongoing saga.
Ongoing saga. And we are one, the pod, full unbridled support for Otter, not for the surfers.
That's right.
Tough break. You got a nice little life out there in Santa Cruz. I don't want to hear it. Okay. The rest of us don't want to hear it. Deal with the otter. Run, buy another surfboard. Help the surfboard industry. All right. We will be back later this week. More from Big Ten and everything else. Appreciate everyone subscribing. Continue to leave us nice reviews, which help. Share us on social media. Tell your friends about us. And we will talk to you later.